Hello and welcome to Baylor Connections, a conversation series with the people shaping our future. Each week we go in-depth with Baylor leaders, professors, and more discussing important topics in higher education, student life, and today, cancer research. I'm Derek Smith, and our guest today is Dr. Sung Kim, an associate professor of electrical and computer engineering at Baylor. A leading researcher, the National Science Foundation has awarded him two different grants, which help fund his work developing a low-cost system for early detection of cancer and other diseases. Last year, he was named a Baylor Faculty Rising Star, and today he's with us here on Baylor Connections. Dr. Kim, welcome to the program. It's great to have you here today.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
You know, it's interesting. We talk a lot about cancer research in terms of the sciences, you know, biology, biochemistry, but you're in electrical and computer engineering, so I'm excited to see how you approach cancer and disease research from your discipline.
Sure. Let's
dive right in. Saw a statistic in a story about you. More than 75% of cancer patients in developing countries discover cancer in a late stage. Now, your work is going to impact patients all over the world, developing countries and otherwise. But when you see a statistic like that, how does that motivate you as an engineer to get into cancer research?
So such a statistic makes me think if there's anything I can do to help fix that. For many types of cancer, if patients found cancer at stage one and receive proper treatment early, then their five-year survival rate is more than 90%. However, the five-year survival rate drops down to 20% for those who found cancer at stage four. So what that statistic really means is so many people die because they could not find their cancer at an early stage. So as an engineer, it has been always my desire to create something useful to help people using my skills and knowledge. So the desire to create such device, biosensor, which can be used for early detection of diseases, led me to this field and still motivates me every day.
Well, what is a biosensor device?
A biosensor is a device that can detect the concentration of various biomolecules in a sample fluid or body fluid, such as blood, which can be used as indicators of diseases. Such biomolecules used as indicators of diseases are called biomarkers. One of very well-known biomarker is prostate-specific antigen, PSA. Even if it is not the best biomarker, PSA screening is recommended for men older than 50 for early detection of prostate cancer. So a biosensor is designed to capture or react with such biomarkers, which causes readable signal changes, and such readable signal changes can be used to determine the concentration of those biomarkers.
And as we talk about your biosensor device, you're talking about something that people don't always necessarily just have to go to the doctor to find, but you're working on a product that'll be very accessible, which might be one of those factors we're talking about. When you began searching for a way to more easily detect diseases, and not just cancer, others as well, what factors did you consider that led you to begin searching for such a product? What ideas shaped the direction you've gone in?
Sure. There are already very well-developed biosensor systems to detect biomarkers. However, they are usually very expensive and require a very complicated process to use it so that only trained people can use them. Also, they require a large sample volume. So if you wanted to do a blood test, your blood sample has to be sent to a centralized laboratory. So the process is long and expensive and inconvenient, and that limits the use of those systems for early detection of diseases. So I found that a biosensor, which can be easily used by untrained people in a clinic or even at home regularly, even before the symptoms are developed, can be used for early detection of diseases, which is a key for high survival rate. So all this information helped me to find the direction to go. Currently, I'm working on developing a low-cost, accurate, and easy-to-use biosensor, which is often called a point-of-care biosensor. So now imagine if there is a device, you can simply prick your finger to get one or two drops of blood and put them into the system, and you'll get the result fast and easy, and what could happen? It's like a blood glucose sensor for diabetic patients to help you to think about it. Because of the blood glucose sensor, diabetic patients can check their blood sugar level day and night and maintain their lifestyle. However, if no such sensor exists and diabetic patients can't monitor their blood sugar level often and they have to go to a clinic every time they wanted to check it, we can easily imagine that it would be very challenging for them. Of course, the point-of-care biosensor we are developing can do a lot more complex analysis than a blood glucose sensor, but they have similar characteristics. A point-of-care biosensor should allow untrained people to use it whenever they wanted to use it. And you may use it at home or in a clinic regularly, whether you have certain symptoms or not. I believe such a device could help people to find diseases at an early stage so that they can receive proper treatment as soon as possible.
How would this device differ from other biosensor devices, and how would it work?
Of course, we are not the only group working on developing a point-of-care biosensor. However, while many other researchers try to lower the cost of very well-developed and expensive systems, we took an approach that we start from a low-cost system but try to maximize the sensitivity. For that, we employed an optical cavity structure. An optical cavity structure is simply two parallel partially refracted mirrors with a small gap in between. While light passes through this optical cavity structure, a single input beam breaks down into multiple beams because those partially refracted mirrors. And those multiple beams will combine on the other side of the optical cavity structure. And depending on the condition at the cavity, the gap inside of the optical cavity structure, the combined output beam has a certain level of intensity. So such a phenomenon is called an optical resonance, and we use this phenomenon to detect biomarkers. So our sample fabrication is simple, and our detection system doesn't require expensive components. Also, our optical cavity biosensor doesn't require extensive sample preparation and treatment. Our device can potentially detect multiple types of cancer and other diseases with a sample from a single finger prick, which people will like it because nobody wanted to prick their fingers multiple times.
That's very interesting. We are talking to Dr. Sung Kim, an associate professor of electrical and computer engineering at Baylor, talking about his work in cancer research as he works to create a biosensor device that would easily detect disease, something people could use in their homes or, as you said, at clinics, something that would be cost-effective. Dr. Kim, as you test devices, what are you looking for? How do you build a device sensitive enough to pinpoint what it is that you're looking for?
We fabricate an optical cavity sample using two thin glass substrates. We first clean them and drill small holes through one of the glass substrates, which will be used as input and output of fluids. Then we deposit a very thin layer of silver to create a partially refractive mirror on both substrates, followed by a thin layer of glass on top. Then we treat the surface for biosensing, and we combine them together with a small gap to form an optical cavity, and we are ready for testing. And then we bring that upstairs and in my lab, we are ready for testing. The optical test setup consists of two collimated laser diodes, a beam splitter to combine those two beams, a meter to direct those beams toward the optical cavity sample, and a CMOS camera to measure intensity, and that's pretty much it. So we treat the optical cavity sample with receptor molecules, a molecule that is designed to specifically capture certain target biomarkers. When we introduce sample fluid into this fabricated optical cavity structure, only those target biomarkers will reach down to the receptor molecules and attach there. And due to the binding of these biomarkers to the receptor molecules, a very thin layer will be created. And because of this change inside of this cavity, light intensity level will be changed. And we use this intensity change to determine the concentration of biomarkers associated with specifically known receptor molecules. In this way, we can specifically pinpoint to detect certain biomarkers we are looking for. And to enhance the sensitivity, we are using two laser diodes with different wavelengths. And we designed the cavity so that one laser diode intensity goes up while the other laser diode intensity goes down as biomarkers attach on the surface. And then we take the differential calculation, which is simply a subtraction of intensity rate changes of those two laser diodes. And because we designed the cavity in a way two laser diode intensities are changing in opposite directions, the differential calculation results in a larger change, which means a higher sensitivity.
Wow. So how time-consuming is that to test just one area of your research? As you're testing, how long does just one test take?
Well, it depends, but it doesn't really take a long time. I mean, in terms of fabricating the sample, I mean, the point is that, you know, we are trying to develop a low-cost, easy-to-use system, so our process is pretty simple and fast. Mm-hmm. So the time it takes to fabricate a device may be about, you know, 4 to 5 hours. And when we need to test it, the time it takes for the test is about 2 hours. But that's kind of, you know, including everything. You know, at this point, we are still researching on this device, so we are not really fully, you know, settled down that, you know, what's the approach and how we're doing it. And also how how easily those biomarkers attach to the receptor molecule, how fast they actually react with those receptor molecules and change the response. You know, that is also depending on the biomarkers too.
Your lab is located in the Baylor Brick. Take us inside the lab a little bit. What does that look like in there?
Okay, so on the first floor in Brick, there is a recently constructed Class 1000 cleanroom where we fabricate all optical cavity samples and other microscale devices. A cleanroom is designed to have a lot less particles compared to other regular rooms through airflow control and filters. Before you enter the cleanroom to work in there, you will need to put on cleanroom garments and wear gloves and safety glasses in the gowning area. Our cleanroom is equipped with the fume hoods, wet processing station, mask aligner, sputter, microscopes, profilometer, and other tools needed for the microfabrication. And the simulations and experiments are done in my lab on the second floor in Brick, which is called Bio and Micro Devices Lab. In my lab, we have an optical table for optical testing, and laminar flow hood for the sample preparation, and fluorescent microscope and other digital microscopes for sample inspections, and 3D printers for printing, you know, prototypes and other parts needed for the testing and experiments, and also many other optical parts and computers for the simulations.
Wow. Well, you mentioned the clean room. Obviously, cleanliness very important, of the utmost importance. Why is that? And what measures do you have to take to make sure that there's no contamination in there?
Well, for example, one of the optical cavity device we tested in the past has a gap of about 2.5 micron in between two partially refracted mirrors. So considering the nominal diameter of human hair is of 100 microns, you can imagine how small it is. So if somehow, if a particle bigger than 2.5 microns somehow gets into our device during the fabrication process, then that means that sample is pretty much dead and we cannot use that sample anymore. And that is why we need to fabricate our samples in the clean room where the number of particles are controlled in there. But unfortunately, there's no way we can completely avoid contamination. We are still working in the research lab. So we do our best to make a sample as quickly and cleanly as possible. And we just try it and see whether it shows the reasonable responses. If so, then we continue working with the sample. Otherwise, we have to throw that away and we have to restart again.
So if I were, you invited me into your lab to look at what you're doing, what process would I have to go through to get ready to enter?
To getting into the cleanroom, you need to first getting into the gowning area. In the gowning area, you need to wear the coverall suit, and also you need to wear the hood and a boot cover, and then you wear that in a glove. So pretty much it covers everywhere, you know, as much as you can. It's not just to protect you inside of clean room, but also it is for protecting the room from the particles generated from you. So once you know you're ready to getting into the clean room, then you can get into the clean room and then you use those equipment to process sample.
We are talking to Dr. Sung Kim, an associate professor of electrical and computer engineering, about his research developing a biosensor device that can detect cancer and other diseases. And we talk about your research, but you're a part of a team. You've got Baylor students working for you. What role do they play in the research you do?
They absolutely play critical roles in this research. I have 6 students working with me, 2 undergraduate, 2 master's, and 2 PhD students. They are doing all the work from simulations to sample fabrication and testing. Of course, I'm working with them in every day. I love to interact with my students and solve problems with them and help them to make progress. I feel so blessed to have them working with me. And by working closely with them, also I try to help them to develop technical skills, but also critical thinking skills and communication skills so that I can help them to become an independent researcher in the end. And I also love to involve undergraduate students in my research. Last summer, 3 undergraduate engineering students worked with us for 10 weeks, and 2 of them are still working with us. And in this coming summer, we will have 4 undergraduate engineering students to work with us for 10 weeks. And they will not only be trained on 3D printers and microfabrication and biosensors, optical detection techniques and microfluidics, but also contribute to the project, you know, by working with other graduate students.
What about working at the Brick? You're working with a lot of people there who are also doing high-level research in various disciplines. I know there's a lot of collaboration there. How does being at the Brick help you as a researcher? What does that environment mean in terms of helping you do the best work you can?
Well, having people around me that, you know, working on research project, various research projects, and working hard to accomplish their goals is very, very motivating because if you're alone, you know, working on, you know, day and night, and only, you know, you're working with your students, it's kind of boring and not really excited. But if you see that, you know, the people around that, you know, they're working really hard, you know, what they're working on, that kind of motivate me that, you know, that I want to do well and I want to continue to, you know, do a good work.
Dr. Kim, we have a couple of minutes left here on the program. A couple more questions before we wind down. And I want to focus once again on the biosensor device you're working to develop. Do you have a sense of how far along you are in the process? And I know that can be a tough question when you're doing research. But does what you've tested in the past give you a sense of how close you're getting?
Well, it's a long way to go, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. We just demonstrated our design works as expected. And now we need to show how repeatable and reliable our system is. And also, we need to show how good our system is compared to other systems. And also, we need to determine what is the smallest sensing area we can use that will define how many biomarkers we can detect simultaneously. And once we complete all these experiments, then we need to try our system with real biomarkers. After that, finally, we can talk about going through FDA approval before putting it into the market.
Well, it's always such a painstaking process to make these visions a reality. And last question for you is about that vision. What does it mean to you as an engineer to imagine a world where people do have easy access to these devices and what it can mean for millions of lives?
Well, that will revolutionize the medical diagnostics field and save so many lives in both developed and developing countries. And that is the reason why National Science Foundation is interested in my research and support me. However, if you think about it, it is actually bigger than what I'm doing and what I can accomplish. It is my prayer and hope that such a device is successfully developed in the near future, whether it is from my lab or others' lab, so that people can use it to detect diseases as early as possible. No one has to die due to treatable disease anymore.
Well, Dr. Kim, that's an incredible vision. We'll look forward to following along with you in the weeks and months and years ahead as hopefully one of these days we're celebrating a product that's not available on the market right now.
That sounds good. That's the goal.
That is the goal. Well, Dr. Sung Kim, Associate Professor of Electrical and Computer Engineering, thanks so much for joining us on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Sung Kim, our guest today on Baylor Connections. That's it for today's program. We appreciate you joining us. I want to remind you that you can hear this and other programs online, baylor.edu/connections. You can also subscribe on the iTunes Music Store. I'm Derek Smith. Thanks to Dr. Sung Kim, our guest today, and thanks for joining us on Baylor Connections.